You're listening to the Boo Boys podcast.
Alrighty. Well, my name's Dalton.
My name's Paul.
You gotta say it so quick like that. We're the Boo Boys, and this week we have two special guests with us.
Tracy Lauren Locke.
And Alan Valor.
And they're here to talk about their film that's already out. I was going to say upcoming, but I guess it is already out, Dr. Seville's horror show. We'll have links and information in the description, so make sure you check that out, as we'll be talking about that throughout some of the show. I looked into the movie. I watched part of it. I didn't get to watch the whole thing because I decided to watch it today and then work got in the way. So I know that there are three main stories that happen in the movie specifically. What is your favorite story from the movie without giving us any specific details like spoilers for people that may want to watch? If you can do that. If that's an impossible question, like you
don't. Or which one did you have the most fun like making?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, I'd say the one that was probably the most fun was probably one called It's Complicated. As a producer of the film, just, you know, having such a connection and watching it so many times through editing process and sound and so forth. I personally don't have a favorite. I love the film altogether, but I will say that It's Complicated. At first, we were a little concerned that it kind of didn't fit the rest of the film because it has more of a comedic element to it. But then after some of the audience response, it actually became probably one of the most, if not the most popular out of the three segments. So, yeah, I'd say not necessarily my favorite, but it was definitely a very fun one to work on.
What about you, Tracy? Or did you just like the one that had the least amount of makeup?
Yes and no. I think after filming and it coming out and watching the whole thing, It's Complicated has to be my favorite too, just because of the comedy element, which is so funny because we're talking about a horror film, but I'm just a funny person myself, so I can always use a good laugh, even when we're watching a horror film. It kind of gives it a good relief.
A little comic relief. I mean, I think that's usually pretty good in a horror movie, too, because if it's nothing but straight, you know, jump scares or constant plot coming at you, sometimes it can get a little lost in there. We actually watched, I had him watch a movie with me last night called Grave Encounters. Mm-hmm. I don't know if either of you guys have seen that. It's pretty much a parody of Ghost Adventures, and I'm not a fan of Ghost Adventures or Douchebaggins, but this movie kind of nails the show in a way where
it nails the formula.
Yeah, the host is like this kind of like alt guy with dark hair and a leather jacket who he doesn't believe in anything, and they're going into a hospital.
And he speaks with the same cadence that all of these like television show hosts have, where it's
like
very
the haunted ones specifically, where they're just like, tonight we're gonna see if this place is
there's
real.
Like a false bravado behind it.
Yeah, well, I can't do that. I'm just not that douchey. But we watched a movie where the first half of it had some comedic relief to it, and then by the second half Paul was bored of it because everybody was just screaming every 10 seconds, and he was kind of just like, we get it, you're afraid, let's move on.
Well, it was mainly for me, not to just make this about that movie, but it was that the comic relief or whatever comedic elements there were to the movie, they just stopped at like by the time half of it was done. So you're kind of left wondering if it was a like comedy horror or a horror. Because if it was just funny for a little bit in the beginning, then it's like, okay, that was just some opening jokes. If it was like a few gags here and there, then it's like whatever. But it was like they were really rolling with the jokes for the whole first half of the movie, and then they stopped and it was just a horror movie. And so it was very bizarre. But yeah.
Do you guys prefer when a horror movie has more comedic elements, or do you prefer when it's a little bit more serious in its horror? Kind of like, I guess, like 80s horror movies for the most part. Like, we think of them now as campy and kind of funny, but like when they came out, they were meant to be taken seriously.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, for me, I would say it's both. I like stuff that's just straight across, you know, creepy, no comedy element, and then I love stuff that has comedy in it, like the movie From Dusk Till Dawn. You know, you were talking about how like the comedy just dropped off. You know, From Dusk Till Dawn kind of has that contrast where it's split right in the middle, where the first part of it is this really serious, you know, crime story where, you know, one of the brothers like did something really horrifying. There's nothing funny about it. And then all of a sudden it becomes this slapstick comedy, you know, vampire film. And that was one that really shocked me when I watched it the first time, because I had no idea what it was about. And I'm like, wait, what? Now it's a vampire film?
I watched that movie way too young as a kid.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I asked my mom what a titty twister was, and she told me I wasn't allowed to watch it again.
I watched that movie by accident on TV, so I did not
even better
know anything that was going to happen. And
I'm on a mission. Before I die at some point in my life, I want to find there's a scene when they're in a bar and there's kind of like a biker dude and he's sitting in a chair and someone comes up to like challenge him and he just like points at his dick and it's like little gun, little Gatling gun.
Yeah, that's Cesar Romero, or
I think something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a big horror icon. Yeah, that was.
So funny, and it's like one of the first things I remember whenever that movie gets brought up. That and the weird like foot scene, but I mean.
That's just Quentin.
Yeah, that's just Tarantino.
Yeah.
Hey, it's his movie.
Yeah.
He can do whatever he wants.
Salma Hayek approved it, so.
For me, when it comes to the comedy in horror, I do like both for their own. Kind of like the movie, the newer It movie. It had the whole tone of the movie had that comedic relief. And it was planned out more, I guess you'd say, which I actually enjoyed. But also, I don't know, even serious movies, sometimes they're so crazy that you end up laughing because it's ridiculous versus who knows if it was intentionally supposed to be funny or not. Because I know we have a line in the movie that wasn't supposed to be funny for the writer whatsoever, and the entire audience laughs.
What's so funny too, though, is when it comes to writing, especially for horror, your audience can be completely divided, because if you're a person who doesn't really watch a lot of horror or it's not your favorite genre, like even if you have a line that might have been meant to be funny, it could still not make it. But then you have people who watch horror and love it so much that something that is serious is funny because you just know, because it's a horror movie, like, oh, I saw that coming. Like, or maybe not that you saw it coming, but just in the situation, you're like, yeah, it makes sense. And so it just ends up being funny. I think those are my favorite, when a movie tries to be serious and you're like, okay, yeah, sure. Do you guys think that the location you filmed on had any help with your movie? Like, was it creepy? Was it haunted? Did you have any weird situations happen during filming?
No, everything pretty much was a smooth sailing. I'd say the creepiest place we shot at was for the segment Break. There was a house in downtown Phoenix, a friend of ours.
That's already creepy.
And it was a house that she rents. It's from the 1940s, I believe. And well kept, but a lot of the areas are not really lived in. And so there was a bunch of cobwebs and spiders. Mm. Like, no, please leave it, because it's just really up the production value. We have a lot of inserts of the cobwebs and everything. And I'd say that was probably the most authentic place we shot in, just because of the history of that house. It just had a very ominous feeling. And we were shooting it's a zombie film where this family has closed themselves off from the world. And so, that's pretty much it. Everywhere else is pretty normal. Bars and modern houses.
Probably made somebody's life a lot easier. Like, it's probably somebody's job where they were supposed to clean that, and then have you be like, no, don't.
I think it'd be the person who was supposed to like decorate the scene. Yeah. Life was a little easier. Yeah, maybe true. They just added a little extra dust.
Yeah, and in the backyard too. What was nice is there was a lot of just junk that they had 2x4s and things that they didn't use. And so we were able to use a lot of that with the production, because there's a scene he's boarding up the house, and you know, we have a scene where he's going into the tool shed, and you know, a lot of these things were already there. So production was very limited, and but still looked very authentic. So that was having that location specifically, just the way it was laid out, really helped, because it saved us a lot of time and money.
It seems like so perfect that you found that house. Was she like advertising her house out for horror aspects, or was it just kind of like someone just happened to know she had a kind of creepy house?
Just a just a mutual friend within the film community, and that's a lot of us Arizona film community members. We just, you know, we're always just helping each other out any way we can. And she's actually in the film. She actually plays one of the zombies in the backyard.
Oh, wow. So,
which is really neat. So
it's funny, because like I have like this whole room crafted specifically to be like the Boo Boys, and so there's like little horror and spooky stuff. But I think if someone asked me to use my house as a horror film set and like to leave everything as it was, I'd be a little self-conscious about my house. I'd be like, oh no.
Yeah, you just got to be careful what film set you have coming in here.
Yeah.
You got to trust the
They're like, oh no, no, don't clean up anything. Just leave it. That's perfect for what we need.
Yeah. Oh no, yeah, right.
I think, yeah, that would be a little bit of a worry. Maybe you're just like, wait, why is it perfect? But also, you gotta also keep in mind, you're like, okay, those are my stuff. Is there any blood going to be splattered mm-hmm. anywhere?
Yeah.
You know, because as a special effects makeup artist, so many things I've definitely tried to explain to people how far the blood is going to splatter.
You're like, I've done the math.
They never, but yeah, countless times where I've tried to explain that they're, that the blood is going to splatter everywhere. And one in particular, low budget film. It was like a student film that I worked on. I made a bloodshot, like a slingshot, a blood slingshot for someone that was stabbing something. And I was like, it's going to go everywhere. And they're like, it's okay, let's just do it. So I did. And I slingshot it, and it covered the ceiling, all the walls, his face, everywhere. And as soon as the director said cut, we had to run and clean it immediately afterwards, which we kind of had to do on Seville as well.
Yeah, it's funny. So we have four producers: Kevin R. Phipps, who's the director, Craig Chenery, who's a writer, producer, and Kirk Levengard, who's one of the actors, art director, and producer. And we were at we shot one of the segments in Kevin Phipps' house, and there was a scene in a bedroom where blood gets sprayed everywhere, and several years later, they noticed on the ceiling that there was still spots of blood that they had missed. So, yeah, you never know where that's going to go. There's that funny story. And then another funny story is we used a squib, like air compressed squib to make blood spray. And there was one that we used, in the segment, break where, a zombie gets shot in the head. Hopefully I'm not giving enough, too much away, but, we had used that squib on a war film, and this thing was almost destroyed because we'd used it so much. And so I had to pump it with so much air pressure. When we did it, it literally sprayed blood so far, it went across the entire backyard. It had to have been like 25 feet. It reached the brick wall, and it hit the brick wall hard. So it probably would have gone a lot further. It was pretty cool, but
it's a good thing it wasn't like aimed at somebody.
Yeah, well, I knew it was like it didn't matter how much I pumped it, because we were outside, so I'm like, it might hit someone in the backyard, like the next backyard
the neighbor's
over.
Just
yeah,
gonna be like, ah.
Just blood comes down.
I've been shot. It's I think where have you been shot? I don't know. There's just blood on me.
What did you make the blood with? What's your
a good question,
tips for
Alan.
Making fake blood?
Yeah, that's actually I
if it's a trade secret, recipe. He can't tell us.
Oh yeah.
No, I can't. It's totally fine. It was funny because I did a lot of research, and I found that cocoa powder, powdered sugar, water, red food coloring, and about 10 drops of green food coloring. I know that sounds really weird, but
color wheel.
Yep. And then you mix all that together, and it gives it that minerally type texture. But then And what's cool is it washes out of clothes, doesn't stain. But then Kirk Levengar, the art director, he found out putting glycerin in it actually makes it last longer and it doesn't dry out. Because before we were having a problem where it would dry out and it would just be this pink crusty stuff on you. And it's like, oh, that's not fun. But the glycerin keeps it like moist, and it actually just, it like weeks can go by and it looks like a real blood stain. Mm-hmm. But then you could throw it in the washer and it comes right out.
We did the same sort of thing with corn syrup and food coloring. And it was really good if you needed drips, but not if you needed it to like stay in one spot, because it slowly just ebbs out everywhere.
Yeah.
No, fake blood in general is just like a pain.
Yeah, it's that balance between the oil base and mineral base.
You get it like 2 seconds of happiness because you're like, yes, it looks great, and then everything after you're just like, fuck
me. Yeah redo the blood, redo
you
the
know
blood.
If you guys take your recipe and you just add like six sticks of butter, you'd have like the best buttercream for a cake.
Oh yeah.
That's true. Because all it is sugar, food coloring, and whatever flavoring you want.
That's true.
It's a great idea for a Halloween cake.
And the next thing you're going to see is like a blood cake just come flying out.
It definitely made it easier for actors that they were dealing with blood that was edible, where if it got in their mouth, it wasn't a big deal.
Mm-hmm. So. I mean, if you buy like bottled fake blood, that stuff's really gross.
Yeah, we had some real blood on set for specific shots.
Real fake blood or real blood?
Real fake blood.
I mean, it could have been pig's blood. I don't know.
Well, I make the fake blood, and we also have real fake blood. It's a lot of blood on set.
You got to be real specific about your fake bloods and your real bloods, and you know.
It's true. There is also like gel bloods and all those.
There's gel bloods. There was no real blood on set at all.
No Jared Leto's around.
No.
No Shia LaBeoufs.
Never. No one punched anybody on set.
Which skit in the movie had you been waiting to produce the longest? Like, were there any that you made like 10 years ago that never got put in a movie or produced yet, and then you were like, this is the chance or something?
Do you have any?
I think just what was like your favorite thing to do in the movie, because they didn't write it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm gonna false impression.
So like they didn't technically, not to say you didn't make it, because obviously you guys made the movie. You are Dr. Seville.
The writers were sitting
there. Yeah, okay. Those guys had the ideas, I think. Yeah.
I mean, I took part in the development of the story, but I can't think of anything. Well, I will say that the segment It's Complicated actually started out as a short story. And that short story, there were some funny scenes that it was interesting shooting that. That was the first segment that we shot. And then watching it actually be done, it was kind of cool because this story, Kevin would had told me so many times before. So seeing that come to life, it was kind of neat, yeah. That's the only instance that I can think of. There's a lot of stuff that I'd love to shoot, but I have not yet.
Was there anything sort of minimal that you were excited the most to do as Dr. Seville in the movie? So not something that's going to be a spoiler necessarily, but like something small you got to do as the character that you were just like excited about getting to do?
That's a really tough question. And I'll be perfectly frank that it was a really difficult time shooting that scene. So to be perfectly honest, just getting through it in general.
I mean, it could be the opposite. Was there a scene you hated doing?
The makeup ones, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean the makeup was a pain. I will say that's a
makeup.
Yeah, I will say comfortably, safely, without hurting anyone's feelings, I will say that the makeup was definitely painful. But it's not to blame the makeup artist. She was absolutely incredible, and she even put the big contact lens in my eye, which
not touch your own eye?
That's no problem. I have no issues with that. I'd never worn contacts before, and this was, what are they called?
Sclera.
Yeah, sclera, and it's the first time I've ever put anything in my eye. I'm like, I can't put this hockey puck in my eye.
It's also like impossible to see out of those usually because they have like such small windows of like.
Yeah. And then my face being pulled, like my other eyelid was held open. So I had a dry eye socket and then the other one had a contact lens. So I was partially blind. And then the fog machine, and it was hot and makeup. And so like the whole thing. And then, yeah. And there's other stuff too, but I'd rather, I'm not. I don't like to say bad things about people, so. But
especially when they're sitting right next to you.
No. It was more of an acting thing, disagreements. But I will say that Kevin Phipps, the director, he did an incredible job keeping things afloat and making sure we saw it through to the end. So, but other than that, I don't want to like. Name names, but I did have a lot of issues performing, but not the director's fault.
It happens to everyone.
It does, but yeah, makeup was horrible.
It was a crazy year for everything. Like for me though, after reading the script and everything and finally getting you into makeup, and you were such a heavy character, and I knew you could go so deep within the character, and I knew how hard you were studying for it. And you know how much it meant to you and your clothes and everything and the whole environment of putting you in. I was very excited to see what you were going to do with this character because it was so different than who you are and what you've already done. And I've already seen the little bits of what you're capable of doing. And you really did deliver. It's probably my favorite. Other than that, it's complicated. Is just watching him in his scary Seville moments because they're so intense.
I know you got to be. You had two different roles in the film itself. You not only were the makeup artist. Were you the main makeup artist, or just kind of one of?
So I did two of the main monster makeups. So I did Dr. Seville himself, and then I also did Mary.
So you'd say you're like the SFX supervisor?
Yeah, because then I also overlooked everyone else in their makeup jobs as well. But I know Kirk made. Well, no, I can't. Never mind. I'd give away too much.
Well, we had another another makeup artist. Yeah, Josh Sweden, who worked under Tracy. He did a lot of the stuff for the Consume. Segment where there's a lot of blood in that one, and he definitely delivered. Then there was a few like open wounds, things like that. He would do some of the smaller stuff, and then he also assisted Tracy a little bit with some of the bigger things. So.
Yeah, it was Mary. I know Mary was like a team effort because she was full body and everything. I don't want to spoil too much, but it was. Like a full body makeup. So I had everyone on deck. They're like, are you almost ready? Are you almost ready? I'm like, she's almost ready, I think.
20 minutes. So yeah, as the special effects supervisor, you also helped manage the camera work as well.
Yes. Once I did Mary's makeup, I really wanted to step away and be on camera. To be on camera was more important to me at the time because I wanted that kind of experience and I felt that I could do it and I wanted to help Shannon Dia, our DP, in achieving her vision and Kevin's vision throughout the film. And I kept getting pigeonholed for special effects makeup when I was in film school and where I would go and apply for something, a different position, or even audition as an actor. And they'd say, oh, it's really down to this other person, but we actually really need a special effects makeup artist. And I got so frustrated just because I know how to do makeup doesn't mean I want to do it on a particular set because I'm auditioning for a different role. And I got a little frustrated with that. So I was like, no, I really want to be on camera and I want to get better at my trade as a filmmaker versus makeup. But when Dr. Seville came about, we tried to find other makeup artists to do his makeup, but I knew what Kevin wanted and what Alan wanted and how I saw the whole vision of what Dr. Civet looked like, and I just knew I had to do it. And so I took a step back and I said, if I do this makeup, can I still stay on camera? I still want to be on camera. So I will apply his makeup in the morning, but I will jump back on camera right afterwards. And so we did 6 hours in the morning of makeup, and then really 12 more hours of filming afterwards. And yeah.
How did you even keep him from melting? Because I know you guys were, you did a lot of filming during the summertime in Smack Phoenix.
It. Yeah, July, we were in this, it was a studio that Kevin used to operate. And we had to keep the air conditioning off for audio purposes, sound. And it had to be anywhere between 95 to 105 degrees inside. And so between takes, I would have to push my eyelid up to moisten my eye socket. And then I would go over to this big fan that would blow somewhat cool air just to kind of dry out my face a little bit so it wouldn't ruin the latex. And I had to do that in between takes, but then stay in it and then go back. And it's like, okay, we're ready for you. And then I'd go back into the room. And that room was very cramped too. So blocking and everything between scenes was difficult. I mean, if you could think of every way a scene could be difficult to perform in front of a camera, that was a challenge that I had. Right there. So it was everything that could go wrong went wrong, and I had to just get through it.
And also looking at your character, like, you had layers on, a full coat on. Like, how are you not just sweating buckets the entire time?
It was, well, luckily I do really well in the heat. I'm one of the few people in Arizona, I love the heat. I do not like the winter. It's a winter's okay. I'd say the part of the winter I like is there's no bugs, but I'm a summer person and I'm used to the heat too. So it wasn't too bad, but even I was having a difficult time with that. The makeup was really bad because if your skin can't breathe, man, your temperature rises really fast. And so that was kind of scary.
Yeah, he would sweat through his or underneath his latex, and I would have to go in and open it just ever so slightly and press out all of his sweat and then reseal it and then go back to camera and be like, okay, ready.
I hope you guys are friends, because I don't know if I could do that for you, and we're dating, like. It's like, let me go ahead and just empty your sweat real quick. Yeah.
It was almost, yeah, it was like a surgeon, like, making an incision to squeeze just out.
Popping it out.
A pus, yeah.
It was fun. It was fun. He is also, like you said, he's used to the heat. He's one of those weird, strange people that run in the middle of summer here. So you'll see him running down a canal in full gear, full attire, your long sleeve hat, everything, and he's just chugging along down the canal.
You know, people say that that's crazy, but
I think you can leave now. I didn't know you were that kind of freak.
Yeah, but
you've gone too far.
You know what's funny is, you know, when you're jogging, funny side story. So one time I was jogging and there was a couple people that were in this canal, and some people fish in these canals, right? And they're going by and they're looking at me like I'm crazy. And he's wearing this muscle shirt. His arms are burnt to a crisp. And he's fishing out of a man-made canal that looks toxic. And I'm like, wait, I'm the crazy guy? I'm not burning right now.
They find dead bodies in those canals all the time. So well, yeah, you are also the crazy guy for running around it.
Way to judge.
Well, it was day. It was daytime. So.
I don't know if that makes a difference, honestly.
I'm kind of with you. I think you're less crazy than the guy who's fishing in a toxic canal.
Yeah, I mean, it's better to, I mean, you know, you're staying out of the sun. As long as the sun's not hitting your skin, you actually run a lot cooler if you're more covered.
I don't know if I could go out with a long sleeve shirt on in 120 degree heat, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, just don't wear like a wool, you know, flannel.
Let me just toss out my wardrobe real quick.
See, if you run fast enough, then the sweat presses against your skin and it cools heat. You down because you feel the wind
exactly yeah.
against you.
Yeah, that's how that works.
You should try it sometime next summer.
It incentivizes you to keep running because you're like, if I stop, I'm going to die.
Have you ever gotten caught in a haboob?
Oh, you're wow.
like out your haboob, you know, the storms that we get that's just wind and dust.
Oh yeah, you're actually
running, and now you're actually running from
one of them picked me up, dust out of nowhere. Oh, picked me up like 3 feet off the ground. No, I'm kidding.
Just spun you around, set you back down.
Yeah, I didn't even see it coming. All of a sudden I'm like twirling in the air.
That's how I got home.
A little Wizard of Oz action for you.
Oh yeah.
The guy fishing just watched you go.
He was like, stop, you'll scare the fish.
He was probably like, I need to stop eating these fish.
Yeah. It's like an episode of The Simpsons.
So let's see. You guys filmed in multiple locations, mostly in downtown Phoenix. And you filmed during the summer, like a bunch of crazy people. And
two summers. Yeah, we started April.
You skipped the winters?
2019.
The comfortable
time. No, there was time. Consume was shot in November. So it was almost the course of 2 years. So it was April of 2019 to summer of 2020.
How fun was it and not to be like one of those shows that inevitably is going to bring it up for the rest of time, but how fun was it trying to film during COVID? Because, obviously you guys had already been filming prior and then...
Right. Luckily for us, the only segment that we hadn't finished yet was the Seville segment, and that took place in one room. So we just had a skeleton crew. You know, we followed the protocol at the time that the CDC recommended. Some people were more worried than others. Nothing bad happened to anybody. So,
At least one of you had a mask.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's funny because my mask has like a slit in it, and that kind of went over everybody. But
we made that before COVID because his mask in general is actually for his face for a burn, so it's like a compression. That's why there's a slit in there. That we made that.
It's a very funny coincidence.
Prior. And it's just really funny because we're shooting this and he has this like plastic mask on and it's super creepy and we melted it right where his mouth is, melted it open. So, and he's always like holding it and stuff, but it's just really ironic.
And that's part of if we do decide to do a sequel, Craig Chenery, he's definitely written quite a bit about the backstory of Dr. Seville, and we've collaborated a little bit, but those burns are significant later on because you find out the accident that he ends up being in, him burning is involved, and then also him being possessed by these demons, these djinns. So you learn a lot more about the origins of Seville later on.
So coming into this movie, I'm assuming you guys have been horror fans for a pretty long time, or at least somewhat into it. I mean, you could, I guess, not be into it and just like making films, could be. But if you had to pick any crazy horror doctor to have a conversation with, who would you want to speak to?
Mine is, I don't know if you've ever seen Dr. Giggles. You ever seen that? Oh, you'd love it. So, I can't ruin it, but I just wanted to... It would just be fun to hang out with him because he has a very interesting code as far as who he kills. And I remember when I was a kid, I watched a lot of movies I shouldn't have watched at my age, but this was one. I was a very little kid, and it is like a slasher film. You know, I shouldn't have watched it. But this one in particular never scared me because of the code that he followed. And it's probably one of the most brutal horror films I've ever seen, too. But I would probably talk.
And it's from Dr. Giggles, or is that just the doctor's name?
That's the name of the film. I can't remember if they refer to him as Dr. Giggles or if that's just the title of the film. But he has this weird giggle before, during, and after he kills his victim, and yeah, it's really creepy. But he kills people with different surgical instruments and breaks into your house. You don't see it coming. And there's a lot of really clever ones in there. I highly recommend Dr. Eagles. Like from the, like, I think it's 1983.
Yeah, it's like mid-90s. I'll have to check that out. I usually, I mean, I'm not trying to rip on your movie here, but I usually like watching bad horror movies.
Okay. Like, what did you think of ours? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. I mean,
well, she didn't finish it, so
I only had time.
It's that bad.
No, it was good enough that I saw a small trailer of it at a horror convention. Was like, those guys look cool. So, nice. Like, off the doctor moment for just a second, though. Like, one of my kicks right now is like Velocipaster and Tammy and the T-Rex. Like those types of movies that are just like, they're so dumb but so funny just out of nowhere.
Like Sharknado? And
I'm not actually a fan of Sharknado just Lavaland. Because those, it's funny. There's like a very, very fine line for me personally on like absurdism and like whether or not you're absurd because the idea is just absurd or you're absurd because you're just trying to be absurd, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
Like a pastor who becomes a velociraptor in the intent to try and fight evil and he fights off ninjas. That's great. Sharknado 6. I'm just not into it.
No, I totally know what you mean.
That's hilarious.
Or like going back to the doctor question, if you don't have one just yet, do you have
I'm still thinking.
I have two, but one of them's kind of dumb, and then the other one's also kind of dumb. So
okay, so they're both dumb.
They're both dumb, but I feel like dumb in different ways. Have you guys seen the movie Clown? So there's this movie called Clown, and it's a dad who's desperate to get essentially a clown for his son's birthday. And I'm going to spoil the movie. It's been out for like 10 years now. Go watch it. I won't tell you what happens at the end, so... This guy wants to get a clown for his son. He can't get one in time, so he finds a clown outfit, tosses it on, hopes for the best. A week later, he can't get it off. It's on the entire time. So he goes to a doctor to try and get the clown, like, outfit off. Like, the whole outfit, like, head to toe is, like, glued to him, basically. So he goes to a doctor, and the doctor tries to slice off the nose, like, the red rubber nose. And I just want to talk to that doctor and be like, what... What went through your mind? Because they don't show like an x-ray. He's not checking it out. Like, he's just sitting in a regular like general practice room and he's just like, let me take scalpel out, it's fine. And I just want to know why. And the other one is the pseudo doctor from Human Centipede. But I want to be like in a glass room, like away from him. Like, I just want to be able to see him and hear him Hannibal style. Like,
flying,
I don't actually want,
right, yeah.
And I just want to ask him why also.
I should have chose that one. Dr. Lecter. That would be like the best conversation. Yeah.
I feel like he'd be trying to be too like cynical to you or like try to lecture you for something.
Aren't they all?
Like put you down, like put you in a different class of people.
Even in real life, that's just kind of how doctors are.
That's also how serial killers are.
Yeah.
They always just think they're better than everyone else and they know everything.
Sure. I can't think of any of them that I would want to talk to, and the only two doctors for some reason that are coming up in my head are Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Yeah, and then I had another one in the night. Dr. Frankenstein. I don't think I want to talk to either one of those.
I don't know. Dr. Frankenstein could be kind of cool, and he had good intentions, I guess.
Maybe. I still think they would just freak me out all in general.
He believes in love. He has to be a good guy. Yeah. He made the bride of Frankenstein.
True. Yeah. True.
Anyone who creates a life is good in my book.
Yeah. I think Casey Anthony would beg to differ. Yeah, I don't know. What about you, Paul? Any ideas? Any crazy doctors come to mind?
Well, I feel like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, like, very obvious reasons you wouldn't want to talk to him because you wouldn't want to catch him at the wrong time. And
well, you just talk to the doctor half of him and hopefully not the Hyde part of
that's
him.
That's the whole idea. You don't know when Mr. Hyde's going to come
just
out.
Just don't piss him off. He's like the Hulk.
Just stand on the left side of him.
It also depends on which story, because some of them he has to drink an elixir to become. Yeah, yeah. So that could be nice. It's all like, you want to drink? No, no, no. Put it down.
It's a metaphor for alcohol.
I mean, that works for the human centipede doctor guy too. Because he was being all kind to the girls when they initially go to his house and drugged them.
See, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if I want to talk to really any scary doctors.
What if they're too charming?
Yeah?
Yeah. And you'll end up one of their experiments.
All right. Well, do you guys have anything that you want to put out there or say or show off?
Any plans for the future?
You can recite your resume if you want and leave off the special effects makeup on there. You have any upcoming projects that you're excited about, or
as of right now, we're just really trying to get the film out there, get the awareness out there. We are on Amazon Vudu and Tubi, and you can watch it for free on Vudu and Tubi with ads. Let's see what else. And then also, Tracy and I, we did a short comedy film called Catastrophe that we have already submitted to the Worldwide Women's Film Festival and the Chandler Film Festival.
Just waiting on responses.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We're not sure yet. We've submitted. It's a dark comedy about a desperate pathological liar. It's sort of a dark comedy character study, I guess you could say.
Lies his way through his life to get what he wants.
Don't we all?
And gets confronted by his new young hot girlfriend if he potentially hit her cat with his car.
Is that posted up anywhere yet, or is that still kind of waiting to see?
I have an Instagram for it. Catastrophe Short Film Instagram. But it's nowhere digitally yet because you can't post it anywhere or else you'll get disqualified for the festivals. But if you do follow me or Alan or the Instagram that we have for it, well, I'll post it as soon as it's accepted into any festivals, and that'll be the first place you can watch it.
Perfect. Fun, cool people are always interesting to have on, and I can usually get people interested in any type of spooky topic. Plus, we do monsters and serial killers and a whole bunch of crazy stuff. So
sometimes non-horror-oriented people might be
a little more fun
because they wouldn't know what they're getting into as much, or they wouldn't know really what to expect.
I mean, it's hard to expect anything when it comes to horror because, I mean, like, there's weird stuff all over the place.
Yeah, cat pervert.
Yeah, those algorithms, you never
like,
know what'll happen.
These guys were exploring an abandoned hospital, and there was just a poster board filled with babies on it.
Yeah, I'm convinced that not only does Neuralink already exist in society, but it's already been implanted and we don't know it. Because have you ever just thought about something and then all of a sudden it's on your feed?
Yes. Yeah. All the time.
Yeah, like that's... Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I said
one thing. What was it that we were talking
about? We were talking about how bad vaping is.
Oh yeah, and then all of a sudden,
turn the TV on.
And it's this new Netflix documentary about how I guess the tobacco industry bought out the vape industry, and I guess the original intent of the vape industry was to have a safe alternative to get people to quit smoking, and now it's actually 15-year-olds. Smoking these like really dangerous vape pens, and they're getting popcorn lung. And anyway, that's what this documentary is about. And we like one sentence, and all of a sudden, it was like,
and it's like, what's worse, you know, popcorn lung at 20 or lung cancer at 75?
I mean, what are the long term implications of popcorn lung? We don't know yet. That's the whole
thing. You just walk around scented like butter all the time.
Well, what if you get popcorn lung at 20? That's like, you're probably like headed to an early grave by like 40. Then it's like, oof.
Yeah, but if you just smoke cigarettes, you could smoke them till you're 75 and then get lung cancer and ride out that wave.
I mean, at this point, you're going to get cancer with anything and everything.
Just breathing the air, I guess.
Wow, this turned to a good turn.
Well, it's a dark podcast.
It happens. It's not the weirdest thing we've turned into.
There is one thing though I wanted to say. I forgot. We were talking about Catastrophe and forgot to mention that I directed it and
he's
the main actor.
She wrote, directed, produced, I starred, edited, and produced. It's
And she's the social media manager.
I can edit that.
We're so cocky.
She definitely is the social media. She did a really good job on the Instagram page together.
I did make the Instagram. That does not mean I'm good at it.
Plus, we had a good BTS photo person.
Yes, Haley. Would be a really good person to bring on. She would love to talk about scary stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
She's an amazing photographer. I met her in film school, actually, Melissa Hamacorn, too. Yeah. But now it's all coming to us.
Yeah.
Like, here's a whole list that we're going to go ahead.
We know a lot of people, and so, like, a question like that, like, the gears are grinding in our head. But we could send you a list afterwards.
Anybody you think would be interested, for sure. I love having people in here to just be like, all right, let's do something random. Awesome. I think my favorite topic besides doing like haunted stuff is like cryptids, because like you never know monsters like the Loch Ness monsters and the Fresno nightcrawlers and stuff like that. Like you never know what's supposedly out there. And it's so fun to hear like the weird stories.
That actually reminds me of a comedy movie. You ever seen the movie Nothing But Trouble with Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd? That one is, I think it was the only film that Dan Aykroyd like wrote and directed, and it's really weird. Some people hate it, some people, I love it, and it's definitely a horror comedy, and you guys would really get it. It's very inspiring because it's so weird and decrepit, and Dan Aykroyd, he plays like the antagonist.
He is a spooky guy. Like he loves horror stuff.
If you like Dan Aykroyd and you like creepy stuff, you will fall in love with this movie. It's a classic. And Chevy Chase, obviously, like he carries the film really well.
Anyway, my face was just remembering the movie, and there's just some scenes in it that just and special effects makeup is he has his nose and no, I'm not I'm not gonna ruin it, but I just was remembering it and I was cringing.
Well, on that note, we'll end with a cringe. My name's Dalton.
My name is Paul.
My name is Tracy Lauren Locke.
My name is Alan Valla.
And we're the Boo Boys. And make sure you check out all of their social media. I'll be linking the Dr. Seville Horror Show's Instagram and information in the description down below. I'll also be listing out your short film and all of your guys' Instagrams, as many people as I can remember. I'll just add everybody in the post. But make sure you check that out. Make sure you watch all the ads on Tubi so that they get paid for it, because we're all just trying to make a buck out here. Well, bye.
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 Bye.